Chapter 16. A New Pattern. The Bombardment Continues. Sea of Mud. Palace Outworks, Daylight Wall, Section 16, 1st to the 13th of Tertius. A new pattern was set. For 2 weeks after the first landing, the enemy attacks followed the same routine. Swarms of enemy bombers and fighters descended from orbit, while the fleet pounded the void shield periphery. Somehow, the exact mechanism was beyond Katsuhiro. The enemy got through, and while the ships in orbit hurled their fury at the ground, the attack craft bombed and strafed everything they could. Every attack saw the Aegis lose efficacy, so that each successful raid inflicted more damage. The shields over the palace proper were inviolable. Not so those around the edges. The trench lines took a pounding. Kilometers of works were obliterated, along with the men and women guarding them. The nature of the landscape before the Daylight Wall was transformed. The perfect flatness of planed-away mountains was upheaved, and new peaks and declivities carved by orbital attack. Quakes shook the ground as the planetary crust was disturbed. All the while, the enemy landed more of his troops. They came down as regular as the tides, rising up across the twisted landscape to break against the fortifications in spumes of blood. Though it was cold at such an altitude, the stink of spoiling flesh infiltrated everything. The sun was gone, hidden by clouds of ash black as the sackcloth of myth. Winds laden with corpse dust blew from far-off cities. When the visibility was good enough, they saw the funeral pyres of distant hives. Spring approached. The energy poured upon Terra caused a rapid warming, and snow turned to rain, even at the top of the world. Freezing mud clogged everything. Watered now by blood, the ground reeked horribly. The recruits fought in the clothes they had been drafted in. Nobody had anything to change into, nor was there water to wash. They became a dirty tribe, skulking behind their broken ramparts in the shadows of the Imperium's greatest fortress. Whatever their original skin colour, they were remade in a single shade, caked in grey dust, red raw eyes startling in their filthy faces. Dust coated the whole world. Their clothes took on the hue of the ground, the fortifications, the downed ships. Everything was the same colour. Everything smelled the same, living and dead. A lucky few were given coats to stave off the cold. Katsuhiro was not among them. To begin with, he cut a hole in the middle of his blanket and wore it over his head as a poncho. He was never warm, even when the dead provided him with a padded jacket and trousers more suited to the climate. All were bloodied and covered in excrement and rotting flesh. He had ceased to care. The cold was a worse killer than the guns. Battle was an infrequent peril. The cold was persistent. Sometimes it rained a toxic slime of pollutants from the burning cities. When it stopped, it left behind a metallic stink. Those who dared to drink the rain perished. Some tried, for lack of water. Thirst and hunger tormented them all. But after a time, some drank the water purposefully, in order to escape. The rain brought other dangers. When tech adepts and their robotic guardians paced the outworks on their inscrutable tasks, rad clickers rattled loud as hysterical ravens.
"We're all dead,"
Katsuhiro said, to no one in particular, one night when they tried to snatch some rest. His teeth wobbled in his gums. His hair was falling out.
"The question is, when?"
"Well, that's the question asked the moment you were born, boy," said Ranakan.
He was one of the few Katsuhiro knew. He never learned many of the others' names. The conscripts hadn't made much of an effort to get to know one another. Death took most before familiarity could set in. Sleep was only ever taken in snatches. Watches were 4 hours long. The enemy could come at any time, and did. Katsuhiro's time was filled with terrifying battles, repulsing hordes of raving traitors, sheltering from the bombs, or engaged in back-breaking manual labour repairing the fortifications. Their efforts were overseen by Tech Magi, not the Seventh Legion, as the conscripts hoped. At least sometimes the Martians lent their servitors or constructs to the task, though machines and cyborgs were just as likely to stand aloof while sentient men worked themselves to death. Daily, trench networks spidered out from nexuses like Bastion 16, bridging shattered sections of the original rampart system, or breaking up the kill zone between the lines into defensible boxes. Sometimes they looped out into the plains to create deeper zones of defense for the bastions, or incorporate lumps of wreckage into the plan. Remarkably quickly, Lord Dawn's original circles of defense were remade, but as soon as they were done, the enemy did his work again. Trench lines were smoothed away, along with the lives of those within, and the digging started anew. Constant attacks broke up the stone of the geoformed plain, but although this eased the cutting of trenches, it churned flesh into the mix, making the work abominable. The walls of the networks were mortared by the remains of the dead. Such things Katsuhiro saw in those 2 weeks. A lifetime's supply of fear and awe packed into a terrible winter. There were rains of debris that created an optimist's wealth of shooting stars. Each wish Katsuhiro made was not to die. Sometimes huge elements of sundered craft made it down from the heavens, or entire vessels cut burning wakes overhead. Once, a capital ship, its back broken, fell on the palace. It appeared suddenly through the ash cloud, its burning lighting up the land. It plummeted towards the palace center, disappearing from view behind the monumental walls moments before impact. They expected the worst. Men stood from their defenses pointing. A voice called, "The Emperor has fallen!" The detonation that followed could only confirm their fears. A brief sun rose in the west over the palace, vaporizing the War Master's falling ordnance and half-blinding the conscripts with its brilliance. For a second, a searing false day bled all color away, then winked out, leaving after-images in the eyes of its witnesses, and the rumble of thermic shock rolling over Himalaya's distant peaks. "The Emperor," someone whispered. Further down the line, people were weeping. Yet the palace guns fired on, punching glowing holes through the pall of ash smothering the sky, and the War Master's fleet returned the same, while the Aegis danced with purple, pink, and blue arcs of discharge, as it had for days and days.
"The Emperor lives! So do you! The shields took it!"
shouted one of Jainan's veteran bullies. He moved down the line, shoving people back to the wall.
"No danger! All mass and energy gone into the warp. That's the Aegis's job, or we'd all be dead 1,000 times already. Back to your stations. The war's not over yet."
Indeed, it was not. Sometimes hours passed with no attempt made on Sector 16. Its bastion heart fired ceaselessly, one small part of the palace's endless array of weaponry. 3 macro cannons with limited traversal studded its outwards-facing walls. The rearmost portion was free of guns, to prevent their use against the fortifications should it fall to the enemy. Between these iron-collared behemoths, the slimmer barrels of las cannons protruded, and neat stacks of heavy bolters in vertical series. The top was crowned with anti-aircraft weaponry, whose quad cannons, each as big as super-heavy tank barrels, banged endlessly away. Their distinctive chattering became the background to Katsuhiro's life, so constant and unvarying that he only really became aware of them when they stopped firing briefly to cool. Behind Bastion 16 were Bastions 15 and 14, offset from the outermost tower to provide the greatest amount of cover. Bastion 14 made the transition from active defence to blackened stump sometime around the end of Secundus, taking a direct hit from orbit that sent its magazines up in a pyrotechnic display. Bastion 15 went soon after. Katsuhiro lost track of the date. It seemed to him that time flowed differently on the line. Life became a series of horrifying incidents, interspersed by periods of exhausted terror. If he had been familiar with the old Catharic myths, Katsuhiro would have thought himself in hell. Despite all the privations and loss of liberty the rebellion had incurred on Terra, and the sorrow and the death of hope for man's future. The war had been far away. Now he was living it. Thus was the pattern of the siege set, until, inevitably, it changed.